This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 20 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we are all traveling this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just a documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other podcasts at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me on Facebook at facebook.com/botfpodcast. Now, this was originally supposed to be a mini episode, but apparently God had a lot he needed me to learn. So I'm pretty sure this is not me who's the only one that needs to hear this stuff. We're taking a slight detour for this episode from our path on focusing on identity, though the more I worked on the research end of this, the more convinced I was that this actually fits right in after all. I had trouble feeling guilty about stopping in the middle of the series to do this episode. I fought it so much that it actually derailed me for a little bit, and that's why it took me so long to get it out. But that's what this episode is all about. I love to trek on, to continue on the way I think things are supposed to go, and I will muscle through roadblocks and push back if I feel that's the direction I'm supposed to go. I'm really stubborn that way. Actually, if you picture a big mule trying to go down a road blocked by huge pillars and just running into those over and over again instead of just going down a different open road, then that's about how stubborn I've been. I'm so stubborn, but I'm also tired. And finally, I got the hint that maybe I should mosey on this road for a minute, and I'm thinking maybe you need to mosey along with me. As a self-respected American adult woman, there is one badge of honor we all love and love to hate. In one word, we say it all: busy. I love to be busy. There, I said it. I love the people I meet, the accomplishment I feel, I'm not bored by any means, and most importantly, I feel useful and needed. I've always been this way. Way back in high school, I was literally in everything you could possibly be in. I was somehow involved in a sport. Now, granted, most of the time it was on the sidelines, but I was involved in a sport for every single season. I was involved in a teen lock-in ministry called Chrysalis that did weekends to bolster faith. I was in every possible band or choir, so jazz band, show choir, marching band, symphonic choir, all of that stuff. Anything that was on stage, I was in it. I took as many classes as possible. Who needed study hall? But when I did have that rare free class period, I decided it would be a good idea to be a teacher's aide for German class. I took lessons in piano, voice, French horn, and violin, and did other out-of-school theater things. I joined something called Quick Recall, which was kind of like Jeopardy for high schoolers, and I was terrible at it, so I don't know why they even let me do it. And I even joined a club that built and competed with trebuchets, and for those non-nerds out there, it's kind of like a catapult, just so I wouldn't miss out on the opportunity. I was at school an hour and a half before school and often several hours after school, and I somehow still managed to do all my homework. I think the main reason my parents let me do it was because they knew I probably wouldn't get into any trouble if I was at school all day. I loved it. I'm not going to lie. And I'm so tempted to do that now. But when I look back at my high school time, I realized how lonely I was. Yes, I had friends. I had people I loved to be around. But I did not really have time to build into those relationships, to slow down and focus on other important things of the present. I was always thinking about the next thing, trying to get into college, and I'm pretty sure I didn't need to do all of this stuff to get accepted into college. I never was able to get really good at one thing, or often even to my potential, because I was pulled in so many different directions. This little segue episode is not going to talk about the proper use of talents or be an in-depth study of the Sabbath, though look out, they might be coming around the corner. But I just flat out want to talk about being so busy and so tired. Why don't we do what we inherently know we need to do? A lot of the things we do to make ourselves busy are good things. None of what I did in high school were bad things. Some were ridiculous, like those trebuchets, though they were kind of cool. Others were kind of useless to my life. And while music is important, the only thing that came out of my violin lessons is a lot of broken strings and a little bit better understanding of other string instruments that I picked up later. Others were fun things like playing softball, but I was so bad that really all it did was add more stress to my busy life. And I wouldn't go so far as to say that I regret doing them because God still used the things I've learned from them, but I do want to be more cognizant in the future so I don't crash and burn. A few weeks ago, I was getting ready to start with this episode. I randomly got an email from the ministry Proverbs 31 Ministries, and I didn't even remember signing up to get emails, and I had never gotten one before this. So it had a video of Lisa Turkhurst's message entitled, Unrush Me. I took it as divine intervention and promptly listened to it. And the thing that really struck me most in that video was when she said that she felt Jesus asking her, "Do you love me more than these?" as she looked at all of the things that she held on to that keep her busy. This is the moment that I know this random rabbit trail episode really did fit in with Identity Series, because especially in our time, with our technology, our culture loves to identify itself with the words busy and tired. What things in my busy life am I holding on to just so I can put it on the altar of the God of busy? Do I love Jesus more than these things? What use are they anyway? What are we willing to give up to decrease the power that busy has over us? Psalm 39:6-7 says, "We are merely moving shadows, and all our busy rushing ends in nothing. We heap up wealth, not knowing who will spend it. And so, Lord, where do I put my hope? My only hope is in you." These verses prove once again that our identity is not found in the things we are doing, our busyness, but it is found in the love that God has for us. In her book, It's All Under Control, Jennifer Dukesley echoes this when she says, "Your worth is not based on your usefulness." The juxtaposition to this thought, though, is that we also need to use the talents that God gives us. This whole topic makes me think of the famous sisters Mary and Martha. Luke 10:38-42 gives us the story of the time when Jesus visited them, how Mary sat at Jesus' feet the whole time, listening to him. Yet this left Martha, quote, distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. Verse 40. This has been me for a little while as of late. I had been so distracted by trying to get the episode done in order and on time that I totally forgot to actually listen to what Jesus wanted me to know, which is the whole point of this podcast in the first place. Like I said, I'm pretty stubborn. At this particular point of writing, it was late August while I was writing this. Our new backyard has a very mature apple tree that our family has enjoyed watching as baby apples appeared to now when they are getting close to finishing. They definitely look like apples now. From our back window, the tree looks bountiful, covered with green and red apples, the promise of plenty of apples to choose from come this fall. But as I get closer to the tree, I realize that there are lots and lots of apples, but they are crowded, misshapen, and quite small. In my extremely limited botanical knowledge, I gather that the issue is related to pruning. So I did a little Google search to see what things I should be considering for next year's crop. I learned that to get the best, biggest, juiciest apples, you need to do something called thinning. I was then directed to a website called Gardening Know-How that briefly described the process, and I honestly just have to read the exact words because as I read them, I felt like the wording was actually written just for me as I grapple with this concept of learning to rest. Here's how to thin an apple tree, or even better, how to thin the fruit of our labors. Of the 2 to 6 small fruit of a cluster, thin to 1 large healthy apple. First, remove those that are malformed, diseased, or insect damaged. Next, remove those apples that are smaller than the rest of the cluster. This part sounds easy to me, a no-brainer. Of course, we should get rid of the parts of our busyness that suck our nutrients, our time and energy with little yield. Starting here in our lives is a perfect first step to get rid of some stress and move toward rest. Are there little things in your schedule that you can give up? Things that don't count on you, things that you dread, things that suck up your resources and time that have only a small influence or benefit? prayerfully, and that's the most important verb of the sentence, consider taking some of these things out of your life so you can breathe and focus more on your assets, on the fruit right for you. Okay, done. Easy peasy. But, of course, there's more to this fruit thinning thing. It couldn't be that easy. The next paragraph of this DIY apple tree care page literally stopped me in my tracks. It was like the Holy Spirit grabbed my face, pushed it to my screen, and said, "This is important." It says, "Finally, you may have to make a tough choice, but it's all for the good in the end. You may have to remove some apples that seem to be perfectly healthy, a noble sacrifice for the end goal of big, plump, juicy, and crispy fruit. Out of the 2 to 6 apples in a cluster, you want to narrow it down to one big healthy fruit. This single large healthy fruit is called the king's fruit." Seriously, when I read this, I got chills. Is the fruit of my faith so clustered that what I'm making looks like shriveled and tiny? I want to be able to offer my sacrifice of fruit to God and confidently be able to call it the king's fruit. How can I provide something like that if I am so busy that I'm literally too exhausted to sleep? Too busy to spend time with God? Too distracted that I miss quality time with the people He wants me to invest in? Satan loves when people are busy. It's distracting. We forget to pray. We think we've been self-sufficient. And best of all, we get extremely overwhelmed when we've reached our limit. That's a time we're the most suggestible to his temptations. When my kids watch shows, I like to sit down with them, partially to patrol what they watch and partially because it just gives us all a breather. And one show that is my particular favorite is called Miraculous Ladybug. The premise of the show is that the villain has this power to evilize these butterflies, and he uses them to possess and control people who are overcome with their negative emotions, turning them into dominated supervillains. Bear with me here. While I was working on getting things together for this specific podcast, the episode we watched was about an overcommitted person who was so overwhelmed by expectations of her, needing to be in 3 places at once, and the final straw was when multiple people got angry at her for not getting things done when they wanted it to be done. Her fatigue, resource depletion, and high emotions made her the prime candidate for Hawk Moth's evil butterflies. All my parent friends out there, I know you understand the situation well. Just yesterday, I lost my cool because I was trying to do laundry, cook dinner, clean dishes, bathe my children, change a diaper, help my husband with a building project he was doing, and trying to answer important medical questions with my friend who was asking me them over text. And this was totally my own fault. We cannot put ourselves in these situations where our mind and body are literally pulled in so many directions and expect to respond normally to things. It's tempting to think we have no choice, but that's exactly what it is, temptation. We don't expect our machines to go and go without giving them a chance to rest and recharge. Machines don't last very long if all we do is make them be on all the time. Even our phones get a break when we put them on a charger, or if not, how long do they last? A study of the best phones with the most modern technology clocks the absolute best money can buy right now will get you at most 15 hours without charging. Our bodies are so much more efficient and high-tech than any machine. We cannot go and go. I woke up at 4 a.m. one morning this week and a word popped into my head: supersaturated solution. I'm a huge science nerd, but I don't often wake up and automatically think of random types of chemical reactions, so I'm pretty sure that this is the reason why God put it in my heart. For those of you who don't have a nerdy science brain, the reaction that happens with a supersaturated solution is one that they use in hand warmers. It's when a liquid, through some sort of unusual situation like extreme heat, absorbs more of a solute, the thing that you dissolve in liquid like sugar or salt. So it absorbs more of that solute than what is typically possible. The problem with this is that it completely overcommits this liquid, and so it's just right on the fringe of getting over the edge. In hand warmers, then, a seed crystal, that little metal thing, when you're ready to use them, you snap that metal container, and that adds that just one more piece of the solute, and the whole thing causes an exothermic or hot reaction, and it completely hardens. I've often been that liquid, overcommitted, fragile, and when that unexpected new responsibility suddenly snaps into my life, then I myself have a heated reaction, often towards someone I love. We are not meant to go and go and go. We are not made to carry so many tasks, burdens, and responsibilities that if given just one more, we may completely crumble. It's so counterintuitive in our culture, and I think Satan is absolutely to blame when we feel guilty for taking a break or decreasing our load. He wants to trap us in a prison of our own busyness that we don't even know that we're tying our own shackles. Studies have shown, yes, I'm bringing in more science, that people who take their vacation days at work will live longer. They have better hearts. Often these people are the ones who get the promotion, even over those others who have spent those extra exhausting hours at the office. Businesses like Google even promote rest, giving their employees great food, comfortable places to relax, and even entertainment to keep their employees rested, which has been proven to increase creativity, something Google definitely likes to bolster. Big businesses get it. Research proves it. Experience craves it. We need rest. As I sit here writing these words, I am grieving for a friend who just passed away from her body rejecting her lung transplant after 14 years. And she recently shared a quote that I've had on my browser for a little bit so I could easily find it when writing this episode. And the quote is, "We don't have to run to earn rest. We run fueled by a posture of rest." And now when I'm rereading her post with her death extremely fresh on my heart, I think she would have been okay if I shared her words. And they are. "Over the last 2.5 years, I haven't had the energy or ability, physically or otherwise, to do nearly as much as I used to or even want to because of rejection. As a driven, independent person, naturally full of dreams and plans, and especially a mom of a very active 3-year-old who just wants to be easily able to keep up with my son like a normal mom, this fact often leaves me admittedly frustrated. As a Christ follower, though, most days, because we all have bad days, it also thankfully doesn't leave me completely emotionally ruined and without hope. No, I'm grateful I learned long ago before life forced me to clear my plate of many things I loved but have had to lay down for this long season, the importance of routine Sabbath. More importantly, I'm thankful before my life suddenly became more simple in all ways, I was already consciously aware that I needed to be finding my identity in whose I am and not what I did or didn't accomplish before my head hits a pillow each night. I pray you find the courage to recognize the same about yourself and then embrace the peace that comes with living in a posture of rest, both tangibly and spiritually speaking. Stop striving, friends. Jesus already paid it all. Because of the cross, is it already finished? You have nothing to prove, nothing to earn. Run your race, yes, but with each step, first and foremost, rest in Him." This time in my life right now is busy, but also physically exhausting with a move, new jobs, a baby who doesn't like sleep, 2 other little boys, 5 and 3. I've been reminded a lot lately that Jesus absolutely knows what it's like to be extremely busy and tired, and was more than I ever could be. One of my husband's favorite passages to preach on is Mark 4:38-40. If we go back to verse 35, we note that Jesus is leaving from being with crowds all day, even being followed by boats of people who want something from him. Understandably, he's tired. So for the moment, he says no to these people so that he can sleep. In fact, he's so tired that he sleeps through a storm that is so powerful, it makes experienced fishermen panic. Jesus knows tired. And Jesus was probably the busiest, most needed, had the most expectations on him than any other human before or since. But the Gospels are full of moments when Jesus left to rest. Here's just a few examples. Mark 1:35. "Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed." Luke 5:15-16. "The news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Mark 6:31-32. Then Jesus said, "Let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while." He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. Yes, Jesus was busy. He was also human, and therefore he got tired. He set an example of taking a break, resting when he knew it was needed. It's okay to take a break. Even Jesus did, and he managed to still save the world. I feel like in general, the word for rest is foreign to us, or that it somehow just, we flat out ignore it. I've said this before, how ridiculous I am when I realize word origins, before I talked about how long it took me to figure out how navy blue is the color that the Navy wears. Anyway, I was recently driving, thinking about the specific topic, when I noticed a sign, rest stop. Rest stop. I have on a couple of occasions stopped at one of these places for rest, especially on long trips or late ones where I was concerned about falling asleep. Often just the action of getting off the highway for a few minutes was all that I needed to get back in focus well. Other times I really did need to sleep for a few minutes. But the point is, when we are busy on our highway of life, there are just times when we need to take a tiny break and rest. Did that mean that I stopped my trip altogether and gave up there and stayed there forever? Of course not. Taking a break didn't mean giving things up completely, but just giving our heads and our hearts a chance to breathe and catch up. Another thing I thought of when I saw the word rest stop was restroom. I've noticed that word before, thinking it was kind of a weird thing to call it, and then I moved on to thinking of something else. But this time it kind of struck me. Sometimes rest is what we need to be able to get rid of the junk. Yes, I am a nurse and I am not embarrassed to talk about the potty. When we go to the bathroom and rest on that magnificent seat, all you mamas out there know how glorious it is to go to the bathroom in peace. We are literally taking a rest moment to dump all those toxins out. I'm not gonna lie, I was going to take a moment here to describe the role of calcium and muscle contraction and explain the purpose of rest days when working out, but I think you've listened to me in my science lessons enough for one day. But my point is, we are putting too much of our identity in the words busy and tired. These are things that we can and must change if we want to offer God the king's fruit of our efforts. Sometimes you need to choose between two good things so you can get best. Sometimes you're tired and you just need a pit stop. That is not failure. It is wisdom. One thing that kept popping in my mind during this was Proverbs 31 woman, which also from that email and just over and over, the Proverbs 31 woman, the passage declaring all of the good things a godly woman can do. But I've always found it to be kind of an overwhelming list, thinking it's what was expected of me. However, throughout this whole study, I can tell you that God is not putting these expectations on us. This is going to be a very brief overview for this topic's sake, and now I'm kind of more interested in delving into deeper here, or better yet, you know, you should. And share with me what you learn. When I look at a psalm, one of the first things I try to do is figure out who is writing it. In the case of Proverbs 31, it's written by King Lemuel. We don't know if it's an actual King Lemuel or if it's like a nom de plume of King Solomon, but it's a written version of the advice that he got from his wise mother. She warns him to avoid things that will cause his downfall. And then, like every good mother before and since, she gives him advice on what kind of wife he should have, because mother always knows best. And the woman here is representing honorable things that a man should look for and celebrate over. And I've not looked at the original Hebrew version, but looking at the English, I do not see the word "and." She does not do this and this and this and this. I see examples. Nothing even says that she does this all in one day. Seasons are specifically mentioned when it talks about warm clothes. I doubt she's making winter clothes in the spring. And there's one verse, however, that I think every woman should take to heart, and I have it hanging up in my baby girl's room. Verse 25 says, "She is clothed with strength and dignity, and she laughs without fear of the future." That means she's not worried about all those things she has on her to-do list for tomorrow or next week. When I did a generic Google search on the significance of Proverbs 31 in Jewish culture, I stumbled upon a couple of articles talking about Sabbath practices. So I decided to go to a new resource I'd actually just been given called Shabbat.org, a website that has a multitude of articles, essays, blogs, and studies of Jewish culture, traditions, and studies of the Old Testament. There were 312 options to look at when I looked at up for Proverbs 31, so I took the first two. And what I found was that this psalm is a poem. It's an acrostic where the beginning of each verse follows the Hebrew alphabet. Men in the Jewish community sing it on the Sabbath as a celebration and gratitude of the Eshet Shail, or woman of valor of the house. And it was not meant to be a condemnation, a conviction, or a despair-filled, unattainable picture of what women should look like or what we should strive for. It was intended as an encouragement, a celebration of all the ways godly women can be a blessing. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves these days. We are exhausted these days. Jesus understands. He felt it. For the past couple of months, Jesus has been sweetly showing me grace and been my rest when I haven't had any. God provides rest in the times of juggling multiple kids in sports, in sleepless nights from babies or stress, when our responsibilities in life, work, and ministry leave us struggling to take a beat. There are seasons where this is just the way it is, but rest has been a part of his plan literally from creation. He does not expect us to be the Energizer Bunny. He is not disappointed when we have to say no to something that we honestly just can't add right now. He is the God of Psalm 23, where in verses 2 to 3 say, "He lets me rest in green meadows. He leads me beside peaceful streams. He renews my strength. He guides me along right paths, bringing honor to his name." He is the rest in our busy. He is the strength in our weaknesses. We definitely have good and important work to do, but we have never been asked to do it all. Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Then Jesus said, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light."
This has been episode 20 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, entitled Jesus, the Rest in Our Busy. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/20. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/botfpodcast.